So, first of all, I think it would be important for the audience for you to identify yourself to make sure that we've got the right human in the right band.
Hello, everybody. I'm Grant McLennan from the Go-Betweens.
We've got the right human in the right band, so that's a good start. So I discovered you, as I just mentioned, kind of rather late, probably a lot later in your career than I would have liked to. It was a trip to Australia, and since then there have really been kind of two stints of the band. So do you feel like you've got kind of a disparate group of fans? Are there befores and afters, do you think, and then are there those that are kind of in between somewhere?
Well, we've sort of just, this is towards the end of 6 weeks of touring in Europe and America, so I guess I've had an opportunity to see kind of the demographic.
Ooh, demographic, I like that.
Yeah. And yeah, there are some fans that have followed us since the 80s, but especially on the mainland of Europe, what's surprised the whole band is the age group of the new fans who...
How young they were?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I mean, I'm just taking a stab, but at sort of, you know, 20s and early 20s and stuff, and obviously they've picked up on us from Rachel Worth, and they've gone back and listened to the other albums, so... Because they know those songs as well, so it's...
But that's terrific, because considering all the... I call it... I've interviewed a lot of the current British bands, and I call it the new British invasion, and, you know, a lot of it is very guitar-driven, and not, it's very melodic, but still, that's very... that's wonderful to hear.
Yeah, I think it's a really good time for songwriting, actually, because a lot of bands that I like, you know, the Kings of Leon and Strokes and... you know, Franz Ferdinand, stuff like, you know, contemporary bands, they're all sort of song-based, and as you were saying, it's very melodic, and it's good. I mean, you can't do rock and roll without guitars. It doesn't matter what Kraftwerk say, you've got to have guitars.
Kraftwerk, exactly. So, I go to parties, and me being me, and my audience knows me well enough, I end up talking about bands like the Go-Betweens, and this is how it goes. Either, oh my God, aren't those the guys who Belle and Sebastian wrote a song about, or did they once open for the Mamas and the Papas? What happens to you at parties?
Well, I'd love to have opened for the Mamas and Papas. yes, we are the band that Stuart wrote a song about.
But you know what I'm talking about? You go to parties and you're either a geek because you talk about bands like the Go-Betweens or Belle and Sebastian or those kind of bands, or people surround you and say, oh my God, I'm so, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a little bit of a, you're doing a discredit to the fans that you don't have to be a geek to like Belle and Sebastian.
No, I'm not saying that, certainly. But I am saying that, it's there are a lot of one-shot bands these days.
Yeah. Well, there are, but there were lots of one-shot bands in the 60s and the 50s and the 70s and the 80s, you know?
Like, well, that one number one hit and people remember them today.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty much what my whole Friday show is about.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're not that kind of band. I think we're a band that, you know, we're fortunate that we had the break between, you know, in the 1990s, because it allowed Robert and I to get sane again and to liberate ourselves from the group dynamic for a while and do a bit of growing up and, you know, experiencing real life again. If you live your life in the bubble, I think, you know, we'd be a lot crazier than we are now.
I'm not going to ask how crazy you are now. We'll just leave that alone. But so I understand San Francisco is a favorite for many reasons. The band really, this played a major role in the band reforming, and that being, you know, running into Slater Kenny at the Hotel Phoenix and that fire that happened out on the beach and all of that. So, my audience might not have really heard the story. Can you do the short version of that for them?
Yeah, well, Robert and I were doing an acoustic tour in 1999 to promote an album called Bella Vista Terrace, which was a kind of a compilation, basically, of our singles. But it was called the sort of best of the Go-Betweens. And we were playing the American Music Hall here in San Francisco. And Slater Kenny came to the show. And we didn't know that they were fans of our music. Robert was a big fan of Dig Me Out. He really liked their music and introduced me to their music. And Robert had said on the stage that this new song that we're doing, we're going to record, you know, as a boast kind of thing, because we hadn't really decided then to play together again. And Janet burst into the room and said, if you make a record and I'm not the drummer, I can kill you.
That's a threat worth paying attention to.
And anyone who knows Janet Weiss takes
You don't want a mess.
Yeah, takes it seriously.
Indeed, indeed. And it was kind of interesting because I taped my Sunday show today and I was able to play a set with new Go-Betweens, new Slater Kinney, and it was old Belle and Sebastian that was re-released. Yeah. But what a joyful experience to be able to do that in this day and age.
Yeah, it's great.
And it sounded pretty darn.
Yeah, it's great because Janet knows the Belle and Sebastian people as well. So it's a nice little... We've often talked about it'd be so cool if the three bands did a world tour and filmed it and made a sort of Rolling Thunder thing. And that's a reference to Bob Dylan concert tour in the 70s for you people out there.
And there's a great, just to tell you that I really did listen to the whole new CD, there's a great line in one of the live bonus tracks where, you know, it said that this is the Bob Dylan song that Bob forgot to write.
Oh, well, he hasn't forgotten many, so...
No, he's certainly got enough of them. Now, the other thing that was really interesting, and again, real trivia, is that your album back in 79 was to come out here on a label called Berserkly Records, which went out of business and held Greg Kinn and Jonathan Richman, and then just when the Go-Betweens were ready to... Well, another special San Francisco moment.
Yeah, we were... Robert and I obviously were big fans of the Modern Lovers and their record, you know, first couple of records came out on Berserkly and a few other things that you mentioned. But they set up an English branch of the label and that branch signed us. But by the time we got to, we recorded two B-sides actually because they wanted Lee Remick and Karen to both be A-sides. So we did a couple of B-sides. We sent them over, but... they went bust, so it wasn't to be.
New album, Oceans Apart, Mark Wallace, back. I know you've been asked this question a lot, but again, new to my audience, so tell me a little bit about that. I guess it was pretty joyful, and it kind of happened as kind of wanderlust, didn't it?
Yeah, the working with Mark again was basically a bit of a coincidence, really, because we'd been talking about the type of record we wanted to make, and initially we were dreaming of recording in Reykjavik or Malaga or something like that, because an engineer who's working with Bjork we know, and he told us that we'd really dig this either of those studios, and so we were thinking about that, but then it just got logistically kind of crazy, and we were doing a show in London in June of 2004, and Mark Wallace rang up our management and said, I hear the boys are back in town, and if they...
We're not going to start singing that.
No, great song though.
Yes, indeed.
And he said, I've got, a cool studio, if they want to do some, check it out, come on down. So we went down the day after the show, and I was flying back to Australia that night, and we recorded Here Comes the City. In one day, and it sounded really good, and it was exactly what we wanted. It was, a driving, pumping, very sort of textured kind of English pop song, and we wanted to make an album that was kind of an English pop record, and Mark's very good at doing that, very good with guitars, and that's his scene, and enjoying the experience with him on 16 Lovers Lane, our sixth album. It just worked out that, we came back in November and December of 2004 and recorded it.
And speaking of, boy, talk about segues, Here Comes the City. So I know about how literate the two of you are, and I really do treat, I was trying to treat this album as a novel. So Here Comes the City is chapter one. What city would we begin chapter one in? Because I've never been to Brisbane, but I have this theory about industrial cities, and that industrial cities really do breed great rock and roll, and we could go through all of them, Detroit and Cleveland and London and, you know.
Well, that's not Brisbane. Brisbane's not an industrial.
No, I know, yeah. I know.
Chapter one starts in Regensburg, which is a small town in Bavaria in southern Germany, and it's one of the furthest points that the Roman Empire got to in its heyday. There's still some stone bridges and original sort of roads and stuff. So it's a very beautiful medieval kind of place. And Robert was living there. That's where his wife was from, that area. And here comes the cities about taking a train ride from Regensburg to Frankfurt.
Sounds like a fun train ride.
Yeah, well, that's where Bobby got the plane back to Australia, because that's where the flight's Frankfurt to Australia.
Now, Darlinghurst Nights, on the other hand, I was listening to it on the way here. I think that would make a great novel that we could sell at City Lights here in North Beach.
Well, you probably think you're pretty good there.
A little beat poetry going on there.
I think you're pretty good there, because Robert's just gone out to City Lights, you know. Like, every time we come to San Francisco, he goes out to North Beach and hits City Lights and drinks from the cup of the beat wisdom that you were alluding to. And he comes back refreshed and energized.
So at least in Australia, you're back on a major label again. And unlike a lot of bands, you've had some of your best work on major, and I'm not saying the Beatles didn't have their best work on Parlophone, because they obviously did, but in this day and age, it's very counter to the fact that you've had a lot of your great albums on major labels.
Yeah, it's a kind of a bit of a weird thing, because our third, sixth, and ninth albums all on major labels, Sire, Capitol, EMI, and they're our most also our most expensive records to make. So it's kind of funny the way it comes around in threes, but this was the record we had to make. I think after Rachel Worth, which is a kind of spooky, eerie, quite lost sounding record, and the more I hear it, there's a real mystery to that record. And Bright Yellow, Bright Orange was Welcome Back to Melbourne, because that's where we recorded our first album. So it was it's time to push the envelope a bit. And I think as a band, now that Adele Pickvance, our bass player, has a third album with us, and Glenn Thompson, the drummer, this is his second record, you know. For example, Amanda Brown only played on two albums, and, you know, Robert Vickers, you know, played on three. So it's, you know, it feels really like a band now, and we still got a lot of things to do.
Okay, I'm going to be controversial for a second and a little bit sarcastic, but serious at the same time. It's unfortunate, but I didn't even realize that there was a biography of the band, and darn, I had to read the Nick Hornby novel first. I haven't gotten there. I mean, gosh, golly.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a few other books in Australia as well, which...
Yes, they could be read first.
Which document that kind of scene. But the book that you're alluding to, in all honesty, I haven't read it, because Robert had read it, and the new edition of it had some recent interviews, and it caused a lot of problems with our friends, and it was a scurrilous piece of Fleet Street trash.
Does the world need, I mean, it's about music, for crying out loud. I mean, you're not exactly, you know, it's not like, you know, somebody that controversial is in your band.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
bands have issues with members. I mean, this is what happens.
Shit, I mean, I don't care about that, as long as the truth's printed, you know?
Right.
Like, if things have happened, well, you know, I'm not going to deny that. You know, that's pointless, you know? And you're lying then, you know? So, you know, and I don't want to write the book, you know? So if someone wants to do it, that's cool. And I think it's good. I mean, in some way, it tells the story from what people have told me, but it's just the whole idea of the book changed
somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
So speaking of Australian books, because I do have always have a big pile on my night table. I haven't been there since I think 2001. So what should I be reading? What is my audience? What should my audience go on Amazon.Australia or wherever we can get them? And what's happening out over there?
Well, there's a lot of kind of, memoir-based novels, like Americans are writing, English people are writing, a lot of first-person sort of taking lots of drugs, going to parties kind of novels, you know, and which, you know, are boring after a while. But, you know, I can mention there's a few writers. There's a really good writer called Julia Lee, and there's a really good writer called Kate Jennings. Tim Winton, of course, is probably a little better known here. His latest book, The Turning, is wonderful. And, you know, if you want to go back, Australia's got a very rich history of writing. And Henry Handel Richardson, you know, her first three books are just awesome.
I recently had the pleasure of meeting up and hanging out with Frank Reeder of the Trash Can Sinatras.
Oh, yeah.
And we spent a lot of time rhapsodizing about all the incredible bands that have made their way from Australia. You know, like one of my favorites is Weddings, Parties, Anything, which I play on my show and people keep calling and saying, who were they? But a lot of them, to keep the discussion on this, on the kind of this part, have never made it out of the country, you know, and people could find them, but,
well,
wedding, you know.
Yeah, Weddings, Party, Anything, they played a lot in Canada. They, you know, because I knew Mick for a while, you know, because I spent a bit of time in Melbourne, Mick Thomas, the singer and main writer. And yeah, they did a lot of touring in Canada, but
Why do you think that you made it? Why do you think that the go-betweens, you know?
Oh, well, because we're good. We're persistent. We got something to offer.
So what you're saying is there's no excuse.
Well, I mean, made it. You know, like if we're going to define, you know, like talk about that. I mean, as a writer and as a performer and maybe in a lower case, an artist, to be able to live off what you do is the goal of any artist that I know, whether they be a, you know, a sculptor or a choreographer, you know, to be able to, you know, to not have to do another job, that's success.
That's,
you know,
the goal.
Yeah, and we have been fortunate in that since we started, Robert and I've never had to sort of punch the clock, you know. I mean, we punch the clock in other ways.
Oh.
You know, like our days was longer than most other people's.
Indeed. Where's the most interesting place? I don't want to say strangest place, the most interesting place that you're popular that surprises you?
Prague in Czechoslovakia.
That's a great city.
In the Czech, you know, like in...
I could see that because a lot of that Eastern European music is, you know, melodic and folk-based and... all of that.
Yeah, we first played in Prague in 1983 as a three-piece, and, you know, we got heaps of people there, and it was amazing. But I don't know if they knew us. It was just we'd bluffed our way through the border and the machine guns and did this kind of secret gig. One place I must admit I really appreciate the audience, and it's always big, is Lisbon.
Really?
There's a especially talking about my kind of approach to things. There's a melancholy in the Portuguese soul, and I think they a lot of our fans get that underlying kind of sadness. It's wonderful.
Is there anything that's happened on the tour so far that's really surprised you? I mean, people throwing hardcover novels at the stage or...
Oh, no. You know, women smashing bottles on the stage in Hamburg and getting up and dancing on the stage and threatening to tear down the PA if we didn't come back on. And so we ended up playing about...
Is that passion or insanity?
No, it's just passion, I guess, you know.
I think it's a good thing. So the last thing that we like to do, which I hope you'll find fun, it's become kind of a trademark, is, and it's how we fill out the rest of the hours, we call it a musical sandwich. And what we do is we take two of your songs as the bread, and then you can put in any fillings you want. And I think I've done this with 100 bands and sent them all the CD. So it's whatever you've always wanted to hear with your music. So two of your songs, and then give me some fillings in between of just any music that you've always kind of
what
wanted to hear.
Do you choose by us?
That's up to you. You get to pick the bread. You choose the two bread.
Off the new album.
Whatever you want. You can choose two of your songs as the bread. I think the new album makes sense. And then, in between, give me some fillings, and I will play it exactly as you tell me to play it, whatever it is.
All right. The two songs from the new album that I want for the sandwich is Here Comes the City and The Statue.
Excellent.
And, I mean, this is all off the top of my head, you know.
Oh, let's do it.
I can do it.
Make your sandwich.
Here Comes the City. Running Up the Hill by Kate Bush. In the Flesh by Blondie. California Waiting by Kings of Leon. California Dreaming by Mamas and Papas.
There you go.
What was that last one?
You were California Dreaming.
I know. Piss Factory by Patti Smith. Venus by Television. Je t'aime moi non plus by Jane Birkin. You must have that. Then The Statue.
Excellent.